Finally today, we hear from Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker with The Left and the Law on Border Politics.
In an article in the New York Times yesterday, Atossa Abramian writes about the symbols and realities of modern national borders. Physical borders used to be to protect against other states, empires, or sovereigns. But today, relatively few land borders exist to fend off neighboring powers. She writes, modern borders exist to control something else, the movement of people. They control us. But she goes on to add that the us they control is quite a broad spectrum of human situations and circumstances defined by tremendous inequalities and differences in the freedom of movement across borders. Mike, so let's talk about border politics, which of course are very center stage, dominated by the Trump wall these days in the U.S. and of course elsewhere, the dilemmas of Brexit, that for some the nightmare that doesn't end with Brexit. What about the economic and moral arguments for open borders? Let's start with what that concept means, which for some people is a scare. Even the Democrats, the idea of open borders is throwing down the gauntlet before them in a way they don't want to take up. What about that term, open borders?
Well, it's true. The Democrats flee from it. It's used as a cudgel these days to beat people, to say that Democrats are secretly in favor of open borders, as if it's a bad thing.
Like in my world of psychology, it's like saying you have very bad boundaries. It's a boundary function that clearly serves a lot of imagined needs, more imagined than real.
Well, the notion of open borders is very different, say, than the idea of asylum or making moral decisions over who tells poignant stories the best about who gets to come in. The idea of open borders, well, we knew it in the United States 100 years ago when people who came to Ellis Island, only 2% of them were rejected. If they had communicable diseases or they were asked a few questions, if they couldn't multiply two by two, but otherwise everybody got in. And there were no moral distinctions drawn at that time.
And that was, of course, tied to the growth of industrial capitalism and the need for labor. And, of course, the history of border politics is very tied to the demands of capital for labor.
Well, there's two or three aspects or reasons, I think, that are very strong arguments in favor of open borders. And the first is economic. I mean, the estimates are staggering about the amount of money left on the table because we do not have open borders. $1 trillion is a common number.
The part of the equation must be the costs of enforcing borders. The budgets, even hiring border guards is a staggering number, as well as all of the other expenses attached to border guarding.
The last number we have for 2013, but it was $18 billion then. It's certainly gone up since. So there's all the elaborate machinery.
That's part of what's meant by militarizing the border.
Yeah, militarizing, and then the whole elaborate process of determining whether you get a work visa for particular technologies. That's all extremely expensive. But the idea of labor being mobile, as is capital. You know, Ford Motor Company wants to build a new car plant in Mexicali. They can do it and take advantage of cheaper labor there, people who are not allowed to leave. That means that it keeps the cost of labor down in Mexico, so it's an attraction. But if labor were also as mobile as capital is, the efficiencies, the increase in economic activity would be stunning. It has always been, every time it's been tried, it's not only a theoretical concept, but there have been three or four studies done, mostly financed by libertarians, really wealthy libertarians, that make it really clear, both practically and theoretically, that there'd be an immense increase in economic activity generally. And just as economic activity in this country meant that Irish Catholics and Italians and Jews who came here after the preceding waves of Protestants had come here have all flourished mightily in this country, and that there's no difference now in that this similar increases would happen if open borders were allowed now.
And there are arguments from the right and the left around open borders, and it's in some ways startling to see the number of editorials in the Wall Street Journal and mainstream press over the last few years arguing for open borders. The mobility of labor and capital is fundamental to our system. But those arguments also don't take into account the inequality that gathers up, whether the borders are soft or hard, and that people come from areas of the world where they come here with needs as well. And part of the discourse on borders in Europe is very, very much centered on asylum and refugee, the needs of people who are fleeing situations of conflict, and our moral responsibility to provide extra forms of care. And I think that is where now the moral arguments line up here in this country too, that there are people who are fleeing desperate situations. And so the moral arguments tend to be aligned with a call for certain kinds of support, not only freedom of mobility, but that we have an obligation to help people in situations where their circumstances are untenable.
Well, that's an argument for generosity, of being good to your fellow person. But there is a larger moral argument, I think. It's the same argument against apartheid. Why should we care about somebody more because of the place where they were born? Why should your opportunities be defined as they are, by be limited by your race or by an accident of geography? Where's the morality in that? Aside entirely from how anybody is treated anywhere, why should somebody who's born in Nairobi have such fewer opportunities to advance? I think the idea, just as we now look at the idea of slavery, which used to be something very natural, as horrible, or the idea of restrictions placed on gender that seemed, quote, natural before, we're past that now. And I think there will come a time when we see that limitations and restrictions based on geography, based on whim, like the fact that you happen to be born 20 miles south of somebody else, can make such a huge difference in the possibilities you have in living your life.
And for affluent Americans, it's a taken for granted freedom of movement, not only of capital, but a certain amount of affluence, that you can go travel pretty quickly across, fast track across borders, and retire or move to other places of the world, and the world being kind of seen as your oyster. But there is a different kind of moral lens cast on people who want to come to this part of the world for economic reasons. It has a different moral cast, and it becomes conflated with smuggling, with criminality. You know, even in Norway, that has had very soft borders with its neighbors, and along border with Sweden, that was virtually visible. Now with this right-wing government, there's a lot of focus on all these people bringing alcohol into Norway because it's very expensive. I can tell you, buying a bottle of wine in Norway, by the way, is very expensive. And people, bootleggers, or people bringing in goods without paying taxes. And of course, that is part of soft borders.
Well, people use spectacular individual examples of crimes as arguments, both in Europe or in Germany. The rape and murder of a teenage girl really set the idea of accepting refugees back. And here in this country, Trump's seizing on the example of the woman who was shot in San Francisco. But in the larger view, it's very clear that immigrants are not committing any more crimes than an average mix of Americans. They also pay more taxes than they get in welfare benefits. There's rational arguments. But,
there's a lot of criminal activity across state lines, too. We may see more of that in the coming years. So this fantasy that all of the thugs are stopped at the border doesn't stand up to scrutiny. Although one can say, yes, there will be different forms of criminal activity and are with soft borders. But in general, the hysteria around that doesn't hold up to the facts.
There will be losers. You know, there will be people, especially at unskilled levels, who will be temporarily hurt. But the immense increase in economic activity will ultimately sweep them up. But there will be, you know, for people who define their identity from their nationality, it's a precious thing. They want the fewer the better. There's some sort of like, it's like a diamond in my chest it's a precious thing that I don't want to dilute by having others.
For that, a positive stigma.
People who are proud to be an American as if they had anything to do with that fact that they're an American. It's fine to feel lucky. It's fine to feel grateful. But the idea that you made some sort of accomplishment by managing to be born here is silly.
Yeah. And many commentators, including Abramian, who have taken up this question of if you don't have much else, that's something, you know, the refuge of those who have little else to hold but those kinds of prejudices. But I think one thing that's different about the Brexit debate now in the UK is that there's a kind of sober assessment of the costs of that thinking and people not wanting to resurrect that wall with Ireland and how horrible that wall was because it was a symbol of and a target of so much pain and suffering. And tearing down walls like the Berlin Wall have become kind of monumental moments of human capacity to reach across borders. And perhaps the Democrats could build on something like that, that we should be tearing down borders and having ritual moments of transcending them, where we walk across them.
Well, it would be require some bravery, but I think it could go unexpectedly well. Rather than recoiling in fear, as the Democrats traditionally do, rather than saying, well, we don't really mean open borders. Of course, we also, but we just want to be a little more humane.
We have a high-tech notion of hardness. They're so right. They do. It's sort of a difference between the old-school Republicans, the steel and concrete versus high-tech borders. It's kind of pathetically true.
It is. It really is. But I think they should
embrace. But there's an opportunity to take this up.
There really is. You know, it's interesting how the Brexit debate is focusing now on Ireland, where the real costs of borders is being highlighted. The memories of how terrible it was for Northern Ireland to be physically separated and to have all the elaborate barbed wire and separation versus what's happening
now. Yeah, and all
now.
Of the ways you could never travel from country to country in Europe, you know, that and when in... After the EU was established, you could drive from France to Germany, who no one would have thought possible, across those borders. No one would have thought possible in the 60s. And what a treasured freedom that became. And we could maybe emulate some of that.
Well, if the Democrats seized these economic arguments, went on the offense about it, I think it might fare better than their reflexive fear suggests.
Redefine strength,
talk about economic advancement. There would be tremendous opportunities. They could get a wide variety of supporters. They could, you know, unions have traditionally foundered on ethnic differences and religious differences. But
yeah,
they could also learn to embrace this model of accepting people at every level. Whoever wants to come here.
Uh-huh. There's a lot to work out, but there always will be.
There always will be.
Okay, this is Jan Hocken and Mike Sendiker talking today about arguments for open borders.